Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. It is indeed a brave new world. This is our first independent show. My name's Taylor Payne. It's an absolute joy to be back in your ears. I'm here with George Colgan and Chris Woff. George, how the devil are you?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
Unlike Newcastle United. And I have to say, on that note, as we begin this brave new era, Chris Woff has turned up for our podcast recording wearing a Real Sociedad shirt.
He's actively taking the piss out of us at this point, isn't he?
In terms of inflammatory gestures, this week of all weeks, is that not taking the piss?
What are you playing at? Are you trying to force a move?
Yeah, I've spent the summer by myself, training on my own, get a bit of warm weather.
Just talking. You know, just talking.
Yeah, just talking to myself.
Went back the Chronicle for a couple of weeks, did you?
In San Sebastian. No, I wish I'd been to San Sebastian. That would have been lovely. Yeah, I should have chosen my attire more carefully. But I suppose it is timely.
Are you angling for a move to a Liverpool-based podcast? Is that what's going on here?
I mean, the Anfield Wrap have been in touch, but they have offered far lower than my market value, as low as that already is.
Lower than fuck all? That's extraordinary.
Just so you know, Chris, the wrap isn't an actual wrap that you can eat with meat in it. That's a name.
God.
I feel like a right idiot excited. Now.
We're already doing meat jokes. We are well and truly back.
Well and truly back, yeah. Yes, so lots of changes going on behind the scenes. Please bear with us as we find our feet. We do have a new email address, podonthetyne@gmail.com. And all the social media stuff remains the same at podonthetyne on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky. Plenty more to come, including a match day podcast, reactive podcast, if and when things happen, and a premium offering a la Patreon or something similar to that is certainly on the cards as well. Maybe YouTube soon, you never know. Chris is going to have to get a haircut. Possibly OnlyFans.
Yeah, I mean, probably not OnlyFans. But I mean,
that's a very niche thing that people would be
subscribing. I do have a little saying, which is that I'll try anything twice. And we'll just leave it there.
Fair play. Yes, so watch this space. There's lots going on. Plus ça change, as the French would say, and all of that. Who's this piping up, though?
Hello, Relaunch Pod on the Tyne. Apologies I can't join you this week, but Chris asked for a voice note congratulating him on the relaunch. So, Chris, congratulations. I'm really pleased you haven't gone into hiding after a difficult summer and the long, long trip south to Singapore. Desperately want to hear about how that all went. And it's nice to hear George's dulcet tones back as well. I thought that he might have just decided now was the time to retire to a vineyard in the south of France. But here he is, a glutton for punishment and ready for more. And, well, what a summer it's been for punishment for Newcastle. Looking forward to hearing how you chaps chat about it and hope to be on soon. Love you lots.
Who was that?
Yeah, who's that?
Jacob, we love you too. Please don't be a stranger.
Annoyingly, I have to say, we've had a lot of messages when we've been talking about relaunching and starting again, asking whether Jacob, aka the Boy Wonder, will be appearing back on the pod. So it is with a heavy heart that I have to say yes.
Yeah, he definitely will be back at some point. Right, a little disclaimer here. We are not going to be able to chapter and verse the whole summer for you. So if that's what you're expecting, I apologise at the top. We did have an incredible response to our shout out on social media, which is wonderful, so much so that we're already planning an extra show for you lot. There's a huge season in store and there will be a lot more Pod on the Tyne than you've ever had in the past. And you'll probably be absolutely sick of us by May.
I think it'll be long before May, but yeah.
Yeah, probably by the end of this week, I think, Chris, if we're being honest. With all that in mind, and after after our unexpected hiatus, let's get up to speed with a quick-fire summer summary of quick hits and headlines. This is something we're going to be doing moving forward. So, chaps, in no more than 30 seconds on each, and I will be timing them, by the way, what's been going on? Chris, Singapore and East Asia.
Very hot and sweaty. I didn't go to South Korea, but I was in Singapore. Returned with a lot less perspiration than I went with. That doesn't make any sense, but Newcastle went there. Alexander Isak did not. Newcastle lost all of the two. They lost all three friendlies. No, they drew with Spurs, so I can't even remember the fixture. But this is not going well at all.
Oh, brilliant.
But they lost, 10 seconds, they lost to Arsenal, lost to K-League Select 11, drew with Spurs. Anthony Elanga made his debut. Eddie Howe seemed very fed up with the world and everything.
That's enough of that.
Wow, gosh.
Right, stop that now. That's
not
terrible.
Not a great start, was it?
Oh, pressure.
Yeah, pressure.
George, I'm sorry, but you've got the worst one here out of all of them.
What?
Alexander Isak, 30 seconds. Off you go.
Oh, my God. Okay, Alexander Isak, or the people close to him, have said that he wants to leave Newcastle this summer. Boo. Liverpool have bid for him $110 million. Boo. Not enough. Newcastle value him at $150 million, but their whole strategy this summer has been to keep him, ideally with a new contract. We are now in this limbo situation of him not playing. Eddie Howe can't pick him. For the team, for training, how it ends up, we do not know. But as things stand, Newcastle are saying he is not for sale.
There we go. Excellent. Right then. CEO, Sporting Director, Chris Woff. Let's hear it.
So Newcastle United still do not have a new CEO, despite Darren Eales having handed in his notice at the end of September, having been diagnosed with a very unfortunate illness. David Hopkinson is expected to come in. He is a former executive at Real Madrid and also has worked at some of the biggest sporting organisations in North America. Sporting director-wise, since Paul Mitchell left on June the 30th, Newcastle have yet to appoint a replacement. We expect it to be Ross Wilson from Nottingham Forest, who is their chief football officer. Andy Howe is currently operating there. And then there's also Suds has arrived as technical director. I would say his name, but that would take another 30 seconds, his full name. It is, yeah. Suds is how we are going to pronounce it, but that is a new rule.
That's enough.
That was a lot better. Right, that was very, that was improved, wasn't it?
Quite concise, that, wasn't it? I enjoyed that a lot. George, pre-season friendlies, the Seller Cup and the Lasses. Go!
Yeah, well, Chris went off on holiday, therefore leaving me to do the two home friendlies this summer. That's typical of Chris. But it wasn't a great pre-season, it has to be said. For the men's team, it was six frontline public friendlies. It was six games without a win. Celtic, Arsenal, Team K-League, Spurs, Espanyol, Atletico Madrid. Chris went away on holiday, leaving me to do the last two games on my own at St James's Park. It has not been a pre-season in terms of gaining momentum. The Lasses also lost to Atletico Madrid during the whole Seller extravaganza, but we're still quite a long way out from the start of their season.
Good Lord, that was on the money, George. Well done. Chris, best of luck with this. Bipolar transfer window.
Go. Yeah, this summer, there hasn't been a summer transfer window. No, Newcastle United have been known by some across the game as Rejection FC this summer because they've gone for a lot of players and haven't managed to get them. They argue they've only actually bid for four of them who've turned them down in the end, but it seemed it's like a very low summer. Exactly, and adding in Alexander Isak, it's felt like a very low summer beyond that. They have actually made three signings already. Anthony Elanga to solve the right wing problem. Malik Chow is the latest one at centre-back. Two very long-term problems have had positions. They've been sorted. They've brought Aaron Ramsdale as a goalkeeper. They're still looking for at least one striker, possibly two, if Alexander Isak goes, and then also they want a midfielder, and they're in talks with Villa at the moment for Jacob Ramsey.
Lovely stuff. Right, George, last but not least, Eddie Howe's state of mind. Let's hear it.
Realistic, I think, is fair to say. I think he sounded quite tired after the Espanyol friendly. What is really unfair is that he's been left in the position for the second summer running with kind of carnage above him in terms of big positions not being filled and having to pick up the pieces with his dressing room. But he is an elite head coach. We're very lucky to have him, and he will back himself to turn things around. We have to keep our fingers crossed that he can.
There we go. All good. Right. Right then, chaps, there is a few massive talking points in amongst all of that that we're going to explore in a bit more detail. And I think the first thing that we should look at, and the thing that probably everybody wants us to talk about, is Alexander Isak.
I don't want to talk about Alexander Isak. I'll
you
be
don't
honest, I'm
want to talk about Alexander
I'm
Isak.
Sick about talking about Alexander Isak.
I don't want to, I don't want to talk about Alexander Isak. Why don't you, tell you what, Taylor, why don't you kick us off? Because Chris and I, like, as... you know, people who follow Newcastle and have done all our lives have opinions, but we're also sort of listening to the club and people around the players, etc., etc.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us how you feel, just like in overall, general terms, about Isak and how the summer's played out.
I feel massively disappointed. I thought Alexander Isak, based on the things he said last year, he loves Newcastle, he's happy here, all of that. He did interviews where he said that after the turn of the year as well. And now, it's really horrible to see this situation play out the way it has. And I feel like the fans are the ones who are kind of left not knowing what the hell's going on. And there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, and there's a lot of words from you know, people who profess to know what's happening behind the scenes, but who knows exactly what's going on. Alexander Isak and Eddie Howe and a few people at the top of Newcastle, you know. And I just wish it would all go away, George. I really do.
Yeah.
It's not what we need going into a season, is it? It's an unnecessary distraction.
There are so many different sort of layers to it. Unlike that human level that you talk about, I feel really sad as well. I mean, you know, you go back to Wembley, him scoring against Liverpool. I got a bit of stick for a piece I wrote at the weekend. I mean, not stick as such, but I described him as a legend, as a club legend. Now, what I meant by that is that everybody who played at Wembley and brought Newcastle their first domestic trophy for 70 years is automatically enshrined as a club legend. And the way that he has behaved since then tarnishes that. I do think like we sort of have to try and take a step back at this point and talk about how this has happened, why it's happened. It's very difficult to sort of uncover facts in something like this, because what you have is you have different parts of a club, different people around the player himself, giving their own versions of the truth. And so it can be very difficult to take a read. But yeah, I feel really sad about it. Taking a step back, I don't hold a grudge for Alexander Isak looking, for example, at Mo Salah, or looking at Erling Haaland and thinking that he should, you know, that these people are his peers. If you talk about a guy who has scored 20 plus goals in the Premier League for consecutive seasons, that's the level he's at. And if it's a matter of pay, for example, then, you know, we know that teams like Liverpool and Man City can afford to pay money that Newcastle just can't, you know, the way they're set up at the minute, still battling PSR, miles and miles behind those clubs in terms of resources. I also don't begrudge him the fact that he can look at a club like Liverpool and think, okay, they're ready to challenge for the Champions League now, they're ready to challenge for the Premier League now, and Newcastle aren't quite at that level. I don't begrudge him those things. I wish Newcastle as a club are a drag on Newcastle, the team. And that is a problem, I think, in existential terms. We've seen that in the transfer window as well this summer. But I just think the way it's played out and the way he's gone about things leaves a really bitter and sad taste in the mouth. I think that would be my starting point for this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Alexander Isak is a complex character. I'll go back to in April, I think it was at the Tyneside Irish Centre when Newcastle were filming their Adidas kit launch for the third kit for this season. Isak was due to arrive, and basically all the talk from people who work for Newcastle on the commercial side to the Adidas execs were basically, we don't know what Alexander Isak is going to turn up here. He's sort of, he's a hard character to read. He's complex, I think a lot of people talk about him. He actually turned up and he was brilliant. He sat to sit with, it was Tino and his coat, I'm sure everyone's seen it.
Yeah.
And he was really good, and he was sort of a joy to work with in that regard. But I actually look at this, and a lot of things that I've read and heard is that people, and at Newcastle they're talked about having been badly advised, and it's not Isak so much as the people advising them who they're frustrated with. I think that does a disservice to Alexander Isak, who I think is a very smart human being. I think he has made this decision himself. I don't think he kind of been fully, he might not have understood the full ramifications, but I think it would be naive to suggest he didn't know what he has been doing, and as if he's been pushed into this solely by his agent. He has been complicit in this decision, and he has decided to act in the way that he has. I agree, disappointment's probably the word. I also think that on all sides, this possibly could have been handled better. Now, Newcastle have been in the most difficult situation because how and what do Newcastle do? They've tried to stay firm all the way through. But the problem is, because Newcastle have been firm all the way through and been adamant he's not for sale, Isak and his people, or whoever has made this decision for him to act as he has forced him to be so dogmatic, so dogged in his determination not to come back, and then it's almost been hard line on both sides, and it's difficult to see where that full reconciliation comes in. So, yeah, I think disappointment and also just sick of this general saga that it's just one of those ones that drags on, and really, the longer it goes on, it's damaging for player, it's damaging for Newcastle United, and I think it puts a cloud over, as we're going to come on to later, what is actually... looks like it could actually turn into a roundabout way, a rather decent transfer window beyond striker front. But there's always going to be this big cloud over it because the Alexander Isak situation is the big one.
Eddie Howe, George, seems to be sort of measured and composed with his answers in press conferences and the like. I wonder how he's sort of feeling at the minute.
I feel so sorry for him. He has to tread a very delicate line here.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's really disappointed and upset that this has played out in the way it has. But one thing that I think is fair to say is, yes, there have been sort of over the weekend when he talked about, you know, wanting players who want to play for Newcastle, you know, there's some kind of spiky words there.
Yes.
And, you know, people can't just expect to kind of come back into training, come back into the team sort of automatically. Most of the time over the summer, he has been very, very non-judgmental of this situation because he knows that eventually, if Alexander Isak stays at Newcastle, he will be the one who will have to pick up the pieces. Now, let's go back at 12 months and put ourselves in Eddie's shoes when, you know, we'd had the PSR shambles, when Gordon had been linked very heavily to Liverpool, when Chelsea had made contact about Isak, and his dressing room, there was an unsettled dressing room, and how hard he had to work to bring things around. Anthony Gordon has spoken about this over the summer. It was very, very difficult. What he is trying to do is to always leave an escape route for Isak, you know, to not condemn him for not going to East Asia, and, you know, trying not to use condemnatory language, because in an ideal world, he still wants Isak to stay.
Yes.
You know, and Alexander Isak is a guarantee of goals, more or less. He is a world-class centre-forward. However much money Newcastle spend in the window, they're not going to be able to replace him with a like-for-like player. And so, I mean, I think he's handled himself really well and full of admiration for that, but it's been really tricky for him.
It has been really tricky for him, and I'll go back to the first time he spoke about Isak this summer, and that was after the Newcastle lost at Celtic, and Howe hadn't spoken before that. There hadn't been media access in Austria when Newcastle had been that weak, and obviously that was when Isak was with the squad in Austria but then wasn't at Celtic, and suddenly it flared up as an issue, and it was a short press conference afterwards. He was on the back foot from the very start because of that. There wasn't a sort of environment where he could really explain what was going on, have sort of local reporters sitting around and he could discuss it on and off the record. It was just those sort of quick fire questions. Then we go to East Asia, out to Singapore, and obviously by that stage Isak hasn't travelled. The initial story, and as Newcastle maintained, was that he'd reported that he had a thigh problem, and that the suggestion was that a long-haul flight wouldn't aid his recovery and rehabilitation. And on the Saturday, there was a press conference at the team hotel. You could tell, and it would partly have been due to the jet lag, but just the situation that had unfolded, basically as Newcastle were flying across to Dubai, it all happened at that point on the way across to Singapore, they stopped at Dubai. Everything, all of it broke as that Isak wanted to leave or to explore his options as they were in the air. And it felt like, for once, that's the one time in a long while that I've seen Eddie Howe just didn't necessarily know how to get ahead of the situation. His press conference, he was put in an impossible position. He didn't know exactly what was going on. There was obviously time difference. And there was one stage where he gave quite a long, detailed answer when it was basically put to him, does this need to be solved quickly? And he sort of was saying, no, it's not about the speed of it. It just needs to be the right decision that is reached upon. And then he stopped and the press officer went to bring in the next journalist. Everyone thought he'd finished Sansa, and suddenly he just went, but we're not distracted by this. And it was quite often, Eddie Howe introduced the word distracted in the room. And the problem is that he was, and it has been ever since. He admitted last weekend that it's become a distraction for the players, and it's just hung over this entire preseason. It wouldn't matter as much, and it doesn't matter that Newcastle have lost preseason matches if it wasn't being shaped in the context of the fact that their very best player is not part of the group, doesn't want to be part of the group, and they haven't been able to bring in anyone who can offer anything like the goals that he provides.
There's been a lot of leaks and bluster and conspiracy theories abound on social media, as well as what we're going to call transfer specialist reporters getting themselves involved as well. George, what can we actually believe at the minute?
Well, Chris and I addressed this in a piece a couple of weeks ago, actually, and it is that sort of sense that there are a million truths in something like this and very few facts, as I kind of alluded to.
I always think about Rafa Benitez's quote of football is a lie.
Football is a lie. It's one of the best quotes ever. I still refer to that every single day, particularly over something like this. So what to believe? Well, I mean, use your common sense. Don't just sort of pick up on the latest thing that's being said on social media and take that as gospel. If you're reading a report that says Newcastle are determined to keep Alexander Isak, you know that's originated from the club. If you read a piece that says Alexander Isak has told Newcastle he's going to leave, that's come from Alexander Isak. Both of those things can be true, but neither of those things get us any closer to finding out what's going to happen by the end of the window. This is what I mean. I mean, I'm not expecting people to feel sorry for us as journalists, but it's very, very difficult to pick a way through. And so it's always important with these things just to take a step back and think about it. Nothing has been sorted out at this point. And, you know, I think that leads on to the next point, which is sort of where do things stand right here, right now? Can he stay? Will he stay? Well, the closer we get to the window closing, by dint of logic, the more chance there is of him staying. The last bid from Liverpool, 110 million, was substantially less than the price that they talked about when they'd made kind of informal contact with Newcastle a couple of weeks before. He's not going to play at Villa. Eddie Howe has said that. And at some point, there has to be a resolution. Newcastle have the power in the sense that Isak is under contract for another three more years. They don't have to sell him. But at the same time, having a disaffected player around a training ground can be a killer for a dressing room. And so there are all sorts of questions that need to be sorted. But yeah, if you want to know what the message from the club is, it's A, he's not for sale, but B, their valuation is 150 million, and three, they would have to get quality replacements in. Neither of those things feel likely at the moment.
That was A, B, and three, George. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Well, that's exactly right, Taylor.
The transfer deadline, 1st of September at 7 p.m, is the one we're going to be keeping our eye on. But let's forget about Isak at the minute and read about Isak, George.
Well, I'll just give a very brief plug to something I wrote in The Athletic. Yeah, I always kept in touch with Isak Hayden, finally released by the club. Andy Howe was in control of that. Something else is on his list of things to do. Pretty extraordinary. And I had a lovely couple of hours with Isak in London. He is full of nothing but love for Newcastle. It's obviously been a really tough couple of years from him since being told he could go, but he holds no grudges for Newcastle. And yeah, I'd love you to search out that interview. It was a great antidote to what's going on with Alexander Isak. And if you all behave very nicely, I would love to play some of that interview for you in the coming days and weeks. So keep an ear out for that.
Is the restraining order lapsed, or?
I'm just looking up, gazing up to the shirt printed on my wall. And as I've told the story many times, it's full of absolute emotion from Isak. Yeah. He knows that I'm his greatest fan. And I just love the way that he wrote, "Dear George, best wishes, Isak Hayden."
You
I mean,
can
it's
feel
just such
the
a
emotion.
Beautiful, such a beautiful.
You really can.
Yeah, stop contacting me.
No truth in the rumours that George was only granted that interview if he agreed to get rid of his night vision goggles and stop going through Isak Hayden's bins.
Come on, let's move on.
Right then, time for a quick break. Back in a minute with some transfer chat.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
So, centre forwards aside, and not to be sniffed at, obviously, but is this, on the quiet, Christopher Woff, becoming a bit of a decent transfer window?
Oh, yes, we're starting with the positive side of the transfer window. Nice, because we're going to then rewind and it's going to be less positive. But yes, and I say that tentatively because there are still, I mean, the window closes 2 weeks on Monday. Newcastle haven't yet agreed terms with Jacob Ramsey or with Aston Villa. As we speak at 10:51 on Wednesday morning, there is hope and expectation that it will progress today and maybe potentially quite quickly, and there is belief that that deal will happen. So then Newcastle will have a Sean Longstaff replacement in. Sean Longstaff was always expected to go. He joined Leeds United last month. As I mentioned in the quickfire earlier, they have solved the right-sided centre-back problem they've had for a long while, a potential successor to Fabian Schär, 24-year-old Malik Chow, 6'4". Seen as a bit of a sort of the way it was described to me is a sort of rough gem that he has all the capabilities and he is already good, but yeah, under Eddie Howe he can really improve dramatically, and he is someone I've liked for a long while. Then Anthony Elanga, I think, offers real competition and a difference to Jacob Murphy. He's rapid, quick, he can use both feet, he can play on both sides, but it's going to provide competition on that right flank. And then a goalkeeper, they have Martin Dubravka has left to go to Burnley, and in has come Aaron Ramsdale, who, yes, I know there's a lot of jokes about he gets relegated all the time and there's question marks about maybe he's rash and the like, but I also think he's 28. He was voted in the Premier League team of the season a couple of years ago. He's already got experience at Arsenal and the like. He is someone who, it's a no-risk deal to a certain degree. Newcastle are not tied into anything beyond the loan. They have an option to buy, but if it doesn't work out and he doesn't usurp Nick Pope as number one or doesn't become an established number two, they can readdress that next summer. So I think in terms of all of those positions, beyond striker, Newcastle are just about actually there. And you'd say the rest of the squad looks strong. But the problem is, at the moment, they don't have a centre-forward. Willa Sula was leading the line for most of pre-season, has not started a Premier League game for Newcastle. Anthony Gordon looks like he may well start as a false nine against Aston Villa at the weekend. Newcastle didn't win a game without Alexander Isak up front last year. They haven't yet replaced even Callum Wilson, never mind if they were to consider replacing, yes, Alexander Isak. So there is still a lot of work to do, but suddenly over the course of the last fortnight, it has dramatically shifted in terms of the way Newcastle's window is shaping up.
It wasn't looking great a couple of weeks ago, George, was it? Let's be honest. Anthony Elanga really the only bright spark from a massive list of rejections.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that Eddie Howe talked about at the weekend, actually. He said everyone sort of rates transfer windows. You give them a 1, you give them a 10, and sometimes you don't actually know how they've turned out, either until the end or, you know, sometimes later on. If you go back to the last Champions League summer window when they signed Tonali, they signed the two young fullbacks, it's really only now that looks like great business.
Yeah.
Largely because of what happened with Tonali. So yeah, a couple of weeks ago, things did look pretty grim. And it's a long list of players that Newcastle had approached and either been rejected by or been gazumped for. And you go back to the last home game of the season, Howe talking about the need to move quickly. Then Paul Mitchell leaves as sporting director, and it's like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Brian Mbeumo, they didn't make a bid for, but that's because by the time it came to make a bid, he'd indicated, after flirting with Newcastle, that he only wanted to move to Manchester United. But this was a theme. There were bids for Liam Delap, moved to Chelsea. There was bids for Hal Pedro, moves to Chelsea. And then, of course, the big ones, Ekitike and Sesko, more recently. Newcastle have struggled to spend the money they have this summer, which, of course, is a big change from the previous three windows, when they've not had money and not been able to add to the first team squad. So yeah, I mean, as we get closer to the window, as Chris points out, it has a different look to it. Filling these problem positions is really important. I mean, the biggest judgment of all, though, is about what happens to the centre forward. Newcastle, it's a fact to say that Newcastle United do not have a number nine.
Yeah.
Callum Wilson filled that role. But at the minute, they don't have a number nine spiritually, emotionally, physically. And that is obviously the biggest thing of all.
On the rejections point, as I said earlier, Newcastle, people at Newcastle maintain that actually, in terms of bids being made, four players have actually rejected them. There's Hugo Ekitike, there is James Trafford, there is João Pedro, and there is also Benjamin Šeško. They are the four players who Newcastle have actually made bids for, but as George mentioned, Brian Mbeumo, they wanted, he was a top target, but they didn't end up making a bid for. With Liam Delap, they were in for and would have enacted his release clause at Ipswich if he'd chosen them, but he chose to go to Chelsea. They wanted Dean Huijsen, same, he had a release clause, would have been the same. Now, on that, I understand the negativity around it, and I understand that it's become Newcastle become a bit of a meme for other clubs, and it's a joke and a laugh. And you can argue, because they were basically with Šeško, I think they knew from the start that was unlikely. They were led up the garden path by Ekitike. They were sort of led up the garden path by João Pedro. And were they right to pursue those deals? Possibly not. But in general, the rejections and competing with these very top clubs and not getting those players, I actually think too much is being made of that. Newcastle could have had a smooth, quote-unquote, seamless transfer window if they'd just gone for players of a lower value or a lower quality who other clubs weren't necessarily competing for. And then everyone would have just said, isn't it wonderful? Newcastle have signed all the players that they said that they wanted to sign. But would the team materially have been stronger going forward? Now, there's a wider argument to be made is, should Newcastle be looking to Europe and the continent more? Should they be focusing more of their recruitment there? And going forward, I think they probably should be, although they have obviously signed Malik Chow from Europe. But the actual players they've gone for, I don't think it was the wrong idea that they had. They aren't the team that they were when they signed Bruno Guimarães, and Bruno Guimarães was a clear upgrade on what they had before. To upgrade on Bruno Guimarães or to compete with him now is far more difficult than it was then, and they're actually going in direct competition with the very best clubs, whereas then, the players that they got previously, they weren't in competition for. Now also, we have to remember Newcastle have been operating without a sporting director and essentially a CEO as well. Now, there's an irony about the fact that if one club should be able to do that, it's Newcastle United, given that under Mike Ashley, they didn't operate with either. Basically, they had a managing director in Lee Charnley. But times has moved on. Newcastle meant to be developed. People have had to step up. Andy Howe, the assistant head of recruitment, has been leading a lot of the, overseeing a lot of the incoming. Steve Nixon, obviously, head of recruitment, has been heavily involved as well in terms of outgoings and the like. And Eddie Howe has had to step up. It's not an ideal situation. Jamie Rubin and Jacobo Solis from the board have also been heavily involved. But for Newcastle to have got where they have with 2.5 weeks of the window to go beyond the Alexander Isak situation, I actually think that they haven't made that bad a fist of what looked like it was going to be absolutely disastrous only a fortnight ago.
We will pick up the pieces of this, of course, as the window reaches its conclusion. I think that thing about their whole approach for this window is fascinating. And I think this idea of Newcastle, the club, being a drag on the team is very salient at this point. In retrospect, they've gone for these Premier League-ready players, oven-ready players, and when the so-called established Big Six clubs have come in, Newcastle have been blown away, and it's either been blown away in terms of money, or it's blown away in terms of history, prestige. Brian Mbeumo, you know, the fact that Brian Mbeumo would prefer to join a club like Manchester United than Newcastle at the minute tells its own story.
Yeah,
he's not doing that because of the Champions League, he's doing that because Man United still represent something. So I think that's fascinating. I think that's something that we will return to in the coming weeks. I think part of the angst around Newcastle and the window has been because Howe saying right back in May, we need to move quickly, we need to move smartly. And then the first thing that you see is a big, long list of rejections. So it felt like Newcastle were losing control.
Yeah, I think as fans as well, we've got to get used to this idea, haven't we, that we aren't as big a draw as the likes of Man United and Chelsea. And you know, it's going to be a difficult one to get our heads around over the coming months, but this is the reality of the situation, George. Newcastle are not quite there yet, are they?
No, not yet.
You've just got to come to terms with that. James Trafford is one of those who got away, but Aaron Ramsdale has arrived, as we said before. Now, Vlachodimos has departed as well, Chris.
Yes, Odysseus Vlachodimos was always expected to go this summer, as was Martin Dubravka, because Newcastle wanted to bring in a goalkeeper who was James Trafford. They pursued for a long while. They made a bid early last summer, didn't get him. They were in talks for a long, long while. Actually, eventually had a deal agreed and accepted with Burnley, but then there was a clause within his contract, having signed for Man City to Burnley in the first place that Man City could match that clause, and he chose to go to Manchester City instead. So Newcastle pivoted, brought in Aaron Ramsdale. As I said, it was partly, it was basically a market opportunity. He wasn't necessarily who they were going for to begin with, but they didn't see the potential permanent replacements being available who they wanted to take the gamble on then. They want to have more time to think about it, whether it's going to be Ramsdale going forward or they sign someone else next summer. Vlaka Demos has gone out on loan. He was always likely to go out on loan because of, for PSR reasons, Newcastle spent £20 million on him. He's only a year into his contract. If they were to sell him for a lower fee, that takes a big PSR hit. So instead, he goes out on loan to Sevilla for the season. Newcastle are paying the majority of his wages. There is no option or obligation clause in the contract from what we understand. But yes, there is a bit of a reshuffle in goalkeeper department.
Malik Chow as well. This transfer was announced yesterday. George, another long-term target.
Yeah, actually, I remember being in Japan a year ago and the rumours about Chow first came up and we asked the manager about it and he said, yeah, of course, I know him from the Champions League matches, good player, don't want to say any more about it. And then, of course, Newcastle pivoted to Mark Gahey, pivoted pretty disastrously.
Was it just a single pivot, George?
Yeah, look at me using the word pivot there like an absolute pivot veteran. God, I love that word. One of the legacies of the Paul Mitchell interregnum as sporting director was that long, long chase for Mark Gahey. But they've gone back in. And yeah, as Chris said earlier, this fills a position that Newcastle have been looking at for a long, long time. Very brief deviation. If you now look across the pitch, pretty much every position, there are now quality reinforcements. Does involve a bit of flexibility in terms of some of that squad, but right wing, left wing, the full back positions, and now in centre half too. That's really encouraging. Still a bit of work to be done in midfield, and of course the big one that we don't need to mention, but like in a lot of those other positions, there's great flexibility now.
Just very briefly, I have written on Malik Chow signing, and please read that on The Athletic, but within that, when we talk about players who Newcastle did or didn't go for, they never actually went back in for Mark Gahey strongly this summer because they were basically told from the off he wanted to go elsewhere if he was to leave, and I believe that is to Liverpool he would like to go. So
I'd also like to personally thank Newcastle United for getting that announcement in before this podcast recording. A massive, massive help. And if we could keep that going, that would be great.
Taylor, it doesn't matter anymore because when things happen, we're just going to do another podcast.
I know,
that is one of the exciting things about this.
But they're going to find a way to screw us up, George.
Well, what they'll do is they'll announce another signing 5 minutes after we publish this. Then we immediately do another podcast.
So we're just constantly...
And then what is basically going to be happening is we're going to be doing a 24-hour live stream of Newcastle United podcasting.
God, can you imagine?
God, oh can my you imagine? God.
Pod on the Time 24. Awful. Yes, massive rumours around Jacob Ramsey this morning, Chris, as well. What do we know about that?
Not just rumours. Jacob Ramsey is the midfielder Newcastle want to sign. They are in talks with Aston Villa, as I said earlier, as of, well, it's 11:05 this morning. They haven't reached an agreement on player or club side yet, but that is hopefully progressing. They believe that Villa want to sell for PSR reasons and they see him as an option to compete at left-sided number eight.
Plus those persistent Johan Wissa stories as well. They're not going away, are they?
No, Newcastle would like Wissa to be the replacement for Callum Wilson, not for Alexander Isak. It has been communicated even during discussions for signing players that they would be the replacement for Callum Wilson. But as of yet, that basically hasn't moved. Brentford need to sign a replacement. They've already lost Brian Bermo and haven't yet signed a centre-forward. So Newcastle still want to sign him, but there's sort of mixed messages on that. Not great mood from some in terms of believing it'll happen, but others are more confident.
Right then, George, the lasses. Let's have a quick chat about the lasses. Still a month from the start of the season. Lots and lots of change over there during the summer. They've got tough opposition in those early matches. And you've been speaking to Becky Langley recently.
Yeah, so obviously moving forward, very excited to still be covering the women's team. I still have a season ticket. Looking forward to the move to Gateshead this season. That'll be a change. Yeah, so a lot more to come on the women's team, but we are still quite a long way out from the start of the season. I was there watching the Atletico Madrid game at St James's, which they lost. But after that, yeah, I asked a couple of questions of Becky. The first was to talk about this summer of huge, huge upheaval and change around the club this summer, and then to ask her at this point, how ready did she feel ahead of the coming season?
Tough contest against a very good Atletico team. You know, we knew the challenge would be a tough one with them finishing just behind Barcelona and Real Madrid last season, with obviously such extensive Champions League experience. So we knew it was going to be a tough contest. we always want to go toe-to-toe. We always want to be right at it, and we wanted to win the game. So we're disappointed in that sense. But we'll refine and reflect. I thought there was some positives, especially in the second half as we grew into the game. I think we've got to remember and have that slight realism of the journey Atletico are on, and they've been at that level and had that amount of experience now for many years. And I think it's our first real go at it at that level, other than the AC Milan and obviously the Bayern game earlier in the pre-season. But yeah, it's game three for us in the pre-season as a group, and we just keep building. So I think, to be honest, it's the commitment of the club to keep advancing what we're doing as a women's team, which I can't speak more highly of in terms of the commitment and the backing, whether it's new training facilities, whether it's the commitment to play on grass pitches, whether it's the squad improvements, staff improvements. So yeah, I think we're in a very good place. The new additions in terms of players, it's an exciting place to be. You've seen glimpses of that today. Glimpses of the moments of quality from the likes of Jordan, Aoife, Molly today on show. I think we just, as a team, need to keep working together on the training pitch to make sure that training environment is a really competitive one, so the games actually feel easy on the weekend. The players that have left us, of course, it's always a really tough one, because they're players that have given everything for the badge. They're players who've got that loyalty and commitment to the club, and it's always hard, always tough, but the club's got to keep moving in the right direction, and I fully support that. The start of the season, I think it's 29 days till we actually kick off against Forest at the City Ground, so we've got some time to go. I would say we're probably 50% of the way there in terms of what we can keep improving on and get to that next level. I think we've not seen the best of us yet across the pre-season, but what I will say is the game against Bayern for the first game was a really good starting point to then build on. It was an exciting one. So I think there's levels we can really produce as a group in the next couple of weeks. And then, yeah, the pre-season, there's some good tests at a similar level to us in terms of we've got Forest, we've got Ipswich, we've got a few other behind closed doors friendlies to ensure that we are looking to keep progressing.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Right then, chaps, Aston Villa is on the horizon. It feels almost like a traditional season opener, doesn't it, playing Villa? I feel like we play Aston Villa the first game of every season. We might as well just do that every year from now on.
Why not?
Newcastle fans, though, are already at the end of their tether, George.
Yeah, I mean, so another piece that we've done for The Athletic this week has been the traditional hopeometer. It's befallen to me, sadly, to write this every summer. And of course, like, it's been an astonishingly positive and optimistic time era for Newcastle fans. The big thing about the hopeometer that we've done this season is that Newcastle are bottom of the league. They're bottom of the table. So in other words, Newcastle fans are the least optimistic fans heading into the start of the season, which, as we've sort of said already, perhaps that would change a little bit if we redid it after the latest bit of sort of transfer activity, but also possibly not. So I do think that's kind of fascinating in its own right.
It speaks volumes to me about the psyche of Newcastle fans. Champions League football, won a cup.
I know.
Everything's shit. I hate everything.
But that is exactly the point. So when we're doing all these kind of season previews, which Chris and I have done and written, it's like, in the moment, things have felt kind of very, very bleak, haven't they? You take a step back. Take a step back and then take a step forward. But take a step back. Newcastle are cup winners. They're in the Champions League for the second time in three seasons. They've got an exceptional head coach. They've got a brilliant, beautiful team in the old-fashioned sense of the word. They've got some astonishing players. They've made some astute signings. Take Isak out of it. The squad looks really, really good. Then take a step forward. Okay, the first bit of the transfer window was a shit show. Isak absolutely dominates over everything else. There's no sporting director. There's no CEO. What's going on with the stadium? What's going on the training ground? You can, like, where's progress? How do Newcastle pick things up if Isak goes or if Isak stays? I actually put all of those things to Eddie Howe at the weekend and sort of said, you can make an argument for this being a good season, for it being a difficult season. To me, it almost feels like ahead of this first game that Newcastle are on a knife edge. And this is what he said.
I think any season can go one or two ways. I think it's, I understand the question. I always try to keep a very balanced view on things. It's never as good as you think it is when you feel good, and it's never as bad as you think it is when you feel bad. At the moment, I'm very sort of neutral. I've seen the challenges. I know the challenges that we face. This is a new territory for us. But I also believe from those tough moments that you can actually build something even more special if you come out the other side. And that's a big if. So for me, the priority now is the players that we have fit and available and making sure that they're fully understanding of what's expected of them, of what we need to do, and making sure we're resilient enough to deal with a lot of outside noise, a lot of speculation on us, which through no fault of our own is negative. And we need to cut that out and unite even stronger.
It is one of those ones where it has been a cloud of negativity, as I've said, and it's not going to be lifted because the Alexander Isak situation is still there. But you do take a step back, and I think things may be slightly different. I mean, it has been a summer where, until a couple of weeks ago, Newcastle hadn't really signed anyone, and yet I am going to reveal that the Google document for the inside the summer read, which George and I will be doing for The Athletic once the window closes, George doesn't know this yet, is currently on 150 pages.
Chris.
I've said this before, Chris. This is,
it's in chronological order, though. It is in chronological order.
Well done
order,
for making it in chronological order. You've somehow made the transfer window last longer than the actual transfer window. How is that possible? You've stopped time.
It has been an extended one. Have
I said this before? But this is, I promise this is true. Chris's notes documents ahead of doing a document become so long that Chris then has to do a summary of his notes documents before then doing the actual document. It's an absolute farce.
There's nothing wrong with being prepared, Chris.
Exactly. Speaking of farce, Newcastle do go to Villa on Saturday, but I actually, and this is probably going to be a left field take, which not many people are going to agree with, but I think if you were going to pick a match where Newcastle were going to have to play Anthony Gordon as a false nine, I don't think Aston Villa away is anywhere close to being the worst one. The start looks very difficult in terms of Villa away and then Liverpool at home, but I think it will be more difficult if you were potentially going to have to break a team down. But if Villa are aggressive at home, as you would expect them to, you play with a bit of a high line, having Gordon and Elanga and Harvey Barnes, as you expect, would be the front three, or Jacob Murphy may start, I think that is they can create problems and cause issues for Aston Villa. So I don't think that's necessarily the worst match for that. Then the second game, Liverpool at home, we know that that's going to be an absolutely ferocious environment inside St. James's Park. And I actually think that in a weird sort of way, those are two all right matches for Newcastle to be going into. That could make me look ridiculous in 2 weeks' time if Newcastle have been hammered in both games. But I do actually have a relative optimism going into both.
On the subject of Anthony Gordon, I mentioned earlier about how this time last year it was him who had that uncertainty around him. I think one of the real positives of this pre-season has been his return to form. His body language looks transformed. He's been aggressive in the way that he's run, even in these, you know, largely meaningless friendlies. I'm excited about that. I don't want to see him as a centre forward moving forward. I spoiled that, didn't I, just by saying centre forward moving forward. I kind of spoiled how
too many forwards.
There's just too many forwards, which is, of course,
which isn't the issue,
which
really
isn't the issue for Newcastle.
Exactly.
Who's going to be our man on the ground at Villa Park then? Are you both going down? Is it going to be a little bit of a nice road trip?
Well, it's Chris's birthday on Saturday.
That's nice.
Yeah, he is 64. Yeah. And I'm so kind that I've allowed him to stay at home. So I'm doing that match.
All right, okay, excellent. Well, I'm going to be watching it in the pub, of all places, which seems fitting to me. I think I'm going to need a drink, to be honest. But you will get our reaction soon after the match. This is another thing
that's exciting
that we're going to be doing on the regular here, is match reactions.
Yeah,
I mean that has the potential to be shambolic as well, but in a loving way that Pod on the Tyne would always be shambolic.
Yeah, I think this is an excuse to kind of give you the story of the day from all of our perspectives, our varying perspectives. Yeah. I think moving forward we'll try and once we've got beyond the first day of the season, perhaps we'll try and be a bit more reactive. But I think this has to be the story of the day, doesn't it? First game of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a big one, isn't it? I think all eyes will be on Villa Park. And I'm not sure what's going to happen, to be honest, George. I'm not sure what Newcastle's going to turn up and how it's going to go. That is it for our first ever show on the free market. Please, out there, listeners, let us know what you thought. podonthetyne@gmail.com. And stand by for plenty more as we begin to grind the gears on Pod on the Tyne Incorporated, including a big Q&A early next week, and we'll dig into that bulging mailbag. It will be, as the kids were all saying in 1972, a gas. Chris has got his finger up in the air, that is. Nothing weird.
Well, I just wanted to say that going forward, obviously, we are now an independent podcast, and just speak to anyone out there again who may be interested in working with us, but also you listeners out there, please rate and review. It is important for independent podcasts that works. And if you do like us and you want us to keep continuing, then we would massively appreciate it.
Absolutely. Please spread the good news via word of mouth to your friends and family and other Newcastle United support and people that you know as well. The more, the merrier. George, you had something to say quickly before we dash off and check on all that Jacob Ramsey news.
Yes, so producer Ollie, Boy Wonder, Jacob Whitehead and myself are all running the Great North Run this year, and we are doing it for the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation. Very proud of them, of us, and we are running it for Sir Bobby's Team 2025. This is a collection of football writers, basically people who loved or admired Sir Bobby, and we wear football style shirts doing it. We're trying to raise money. We would be very, very grateful if you would consider sponsoring us. I know that a lot of people ask this time of year, but yeah, we'd be really, really grateful. So you can search on Just Giving for Sir Bobby's Team 2025. Really appreciate that.
And I'm sure we can stick a link in the show notes as well so you can find it there. Thank you very much, chaps. That's it. A brave new world. We've crossed over. We are independent officially. How do we feel? Are we revitalized? Are we energized? Are we slightly nauseous? What's happening?
I think I may replace this Real Sociedad shirt with a more upbeat one, a more one that more reflects that I am back within the fold. I feel I've been reintegrated.
That one you had with the dolphin on, that was nice. Was that Pescara? That was a lovely shirt. Yeah, beautiful that. Thank you very much, George Colgan, for your time as well.
You're welcome. We've kept this under an hour. I think we've done pretty well with that. We are going to try and be shorter, sharper in our midweek pods. We could have talked all day, let's be honest, but more to follow.
Lots of time for that. Lots of time. Please keep your eyes open through your feed as well. There'll be all sorts of stuff dropping as we go. And like we said earlier on, there is going to be a subscription-based offer from Pod on the Tyne at some point, so please keep your eyes open for that as well. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, thank you very much for your patience. Thank you very much for sticking with us. I hope you've all had a great summer as we go into the new season. Look after yourselves. Take care. And we shall speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Malik, ciao. Hope you're good. Yes, finally I'm here. I'm really excited to see you all of you. And yeah, away the Lux.